Rock out is Stone Cold. The Hellraiser is back.
Here we go. Evolution of the Shield.
John Cena versus the Showstopper.
Hulk Hogan and The Rock in the same ring.
You will never take my place at the head of the table.
Undertaker with a Hellscape submission. Oh, my God. What?
My God, Michaels just kicked Cena's head off.
The Monday Night Wars have come to WrestleMania.
It'll be The Rock. It'll be Austin one-on-one.
Third and fourth, the Undertaker.
Do you believe in miracles?
The streak is over.
What's up, guys? We are off and running back on WWE Rivalries on the WWE podcast on this May 13th, 2021, as we are just 2 days away from WrestleMania Backlash. And it's kind of weird, eh? How they've gone about, you know, naming the pay-per-view that succeeds WrestleMania. You know, we've had Backlash, which was the typical one, and then went to Extreme Rules for a couple years, and now we're back to WrestleMania Backlash. And it's so crazy because the name Backlash in and of itself kind of tells you all you need to know about what the pay-per-view should be all about. So adding WrestleMania Backlash in there is almost a bit redundant in a way. And then I remember a couple years ago, the first ever, or like when they restarted the brand split and they went back to brand exclusive pay-per-views that only lasted about 18 months or so, the first brand exclusive pay-per-view to SmackDown was Backlash. That was the one that followed SummerSlam when AJ Styles beat Dean Ambrose for the WWE Championship. And when I was growing up, that was the slot reserved for Unforgiven. And I think before that, it was Fully Loaded. So I don't know. I think Backlash should be the one that directly follows WrestleMania. And I just think that they should get rid of the whole WrestleMania Backlash. It's just redundant. But that's not why you're here. But before we get into rivalries, I don't usually like to touch on the current product, but I'm going to just take a couple minutes to do so to talk about Retro SmackDown. So I have a couple things I want to get off my chest here about Retro SmackDown, because like a lot of you, when I heard about Retro SmackDown, I thought they were going to bring back one of the old sets, whether that be the Fist or the original SmackDown stage, let's say when there were spirals, or, you know, just something like that, an old theme song, whether it be the original theme or the song by Marilyn Manson, Beautiful People, something like that. But no. All they did was bring back a referee shirt of SmackDown during the Ruthless Aggression Era, which, if you actually look deep into it, it's pretty much the same style of ref shirt that they had in WCW, but that's neither here nor there. And they brought back the ancient logo from the early 90s, late 80s of WWE, and they put the CGI fist in. And in my head, I'm just like, well, one thing, why do you have the old logo corresponding with SmackDown when SmackDown didn't exist when the WWE had that logo? That's the first thing that bothered me. Second of all, Michael Cole and Pat McPhee, I think his name is, the new guy. Oh, I'm not messing that up. They're dressed like the commentators were dressed back in the early 90s, but SmackDown only existed in the late 90s. So what's going on there? And second of all, the CGI fist, like, just do it or don't. It's like they just tried to throw a bunch of retro stuff at the wall at the same time and didn't care of there being any, you know, link and actual congruity between SmackDown and the old logo and the way the commentators were dressing. But anyway, just really bothered me. And, you know, why didn't they just bring back Tony Chimmel just for one time? You know, he was kind of like the ring announcer exclusive to SmackDown for years upon years upon years. But anyway, I'm not going to get too into that. What you guys are here for is rivalries, and that's what we're going to do today. And today we are going to go back to 2006 for John Cena versus Rob Van Dam over the WWE Championship that spilled into the summer of 2006. So what we're going to go back today, first off, to review is where John Cena was at. And, you know, last week I did a deep dive on John Cena in 2016 and where he was at that point in time. And 2016, when he had the program with AJ Styles, he was really entering what was the twilight of his full-time career. I still believe we have a couple John Cena matches left in us, probably a couple significant programs. I'm hoping that we have an actual one with Roman Reigns, as opposed to just the half-assed one we got to see in the fall of 2017 that just led to a match at No Mercy, which was, you know, what was that all about? But 2006 was the peak of John Cena, in my opinion, because he hadn't completely ditched the gangster gimmick, and I don't think everyone had grown quite tired of him yet. And I mean, in 2006, he regained the WWE Championship from Edge at the Royal Rumble after Edge cashed in at that New Year's Resolution, one of the two. And then he had the WrestleMania main event match with Triple H. And that was like the first time you ever saw the crowd turn on John Cena in Chicago, I believe it was, when the crowd really got behind Triple H. And you know, at this point in 2006, Triple H had been the biggest heel in the company for 4 years running, so it was rare to see Triple H get cheered. But I remember Jim Ross was kind of building it as like, you know, the old school fans versus the new school fans, and that's why. But it made for a cool dynamic nonetheless. And John Cena obviously overcame Triple H, retained the WWE Championship, his first ever successful WWE Championship title defense at a WrestleMania, as the year before that he had won his first ever WWE Championship against John Bradshaw Layfield. And then at Backlash, you know, just Backlash, he retained against Triple H and Edge in a triple threat match for the WWE Championship. So John Cena riding high, you know, the new face of the company over on Monday Night Raw, and he is just on a meteoric rise throughout the WWE landscape. But at that very same WrestleMania, WrestleMania 22 that is, we had the second ever Money in the Bank ladder match. And at this time, as is obvious, the Money in the Bank ladder match was held at WrestleMania. And I mean, I think that it was probably a good idea to make it its own pay-per-view. I think the Money in the Bank ladder match has become one of those gimmick matches that is deserving of its own pay-per-view, like the Royal Rumble, but not like Hell in a Cell or TLC. But Money in the Bank, although I feel like it's lost its value over the last few years, I truly believe that it is one of those matches that is deserving of its own pay-per-view. And obviously the first Money in the Bank winner was Edge, and he had successfully cashed in against John Cena earlier in the year, and he waited just about 10 months to do so and fully capitalized on that. But at this year's WrestleMania, Edge wasn't in the Money in the Bank ladder match, so we were guaranteed a new winner to be the second ever winner of the Money in the Bank briefcase. And the men in this match were Finlay, Ric Flair, Bobby Lashley, Rob Van Dam, Matt Hardy, and Shelton Benjamin, who was the only returning member from the first ever Money in the Bank ladder match. And we got our answer as to who was going to be the second ever winner of the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Stake here in that briefcase above the ring is an opportunity to wrestle for the championship over the next year.
Van Dam.
This guy can fly.
Van Dam on top of that.
No, you're way too high.
Oh, he can do it. Somebody stop him.
You're gonna break yourself with him.
ECW back in the day, Chi-Town, baby. So I'm telling you, they love Van Dam here. And Van Dam now in hot pursuit of that briefcase.
Van Dam, can he win it? He missed WrestleMania last year with a serious knee injury. He's looking for that opportunity.
Whoa. Look at this. The first he's got to do is pull it.
Yeah! Oh, my God! Jesus!
How the hell did he do that?
The athleticism of Benjamin.
Where the hell did it come from?
Benjamin, I think, leapfrogged from the rope directly to the ladder.
Who got freaking Spider-Man?
You gotta be freaking kidding me. Where did it come from?
Well, look at Matt Hardy.
Behind you guys, look at
Matt Hardy. Cut it.
The backboard.
Come back, just pull.
Twin ladders. Boy, what a match! What a match!
What a competitive match! And you can tell how motivated he is. The crash and the burn!
Oh my God!
Van Dam here, can he do it?
Whoa, wait a minute, he's there!
Van Dam on the top of the line!
He's got it!
Van Dam!
He's got it!
Van Dam!
I knew it! I knew it!
Second, 2006, Rob Van Dam can now be called Mr. Money in the Bank. Hey, you know what? I wish...
And there you have it. Rob Van Dam wins the second ever Money in the Bank ladder match and earns the right to face the champion of his choosing through over the course of the next 12 months. And you guys know that whole story, so I won't elaborate any more than that. So, Rob Van Dam, I think at this point, was a guy that WWE had been waiting to push for quite a while. And I think that it was just a combination of injuries and maybe his attitude backstage that never really gave them a chance to pull the trigger on him until this point. Because let's go back to 2001 for a second, when he first showed up in WWE or WWF at that time during the invasion angle. And he was kind of like that breakout star from the Alliance, you know, WCW, ECW, that I feel like really just kind of hit the ground running, along with Booker T. Him and Booker T were kind of the two guys that when they showed up in WWE, they transitioned rather flawlessly and really did not miss a beat. Like, you saw they tried it with Rhino, and Rhino didn't really work out, and he had already been in WWE for a bit by the time the invasion angle came. Ditto with the Dudley Boys, and they were a tag team. Diamond Dallas Page was the guy who I felt just really flopped. But RVD was one of the main ones who, in my mind, was like a star in the making right off the bat. You know, at the invasion pay-per-view, he beat Jeff Hardy in a hardcore match for the Hardcore Championship. He had a couple of matches with The Rock. He was in a triple threat match with The Rock and Chris Jericho for the WCW Championship. And he was on Team Alliance in the winner-take-all match at Survivor Series, the 5-on-5 match between Team Alliance and Team WWF. And then WrestleMania 18, he wins the Intercontinental Championship from William Regal. And then when he was on Monday Night Raw from 2002 to 2003, he kind of got lost in the shuffle in the Intercontinental Championship picture. Then he had the tag team run with Kane. Then he won the tag team championships with Booker T. And when he went with Booker T and they won the championships and they went to WrestleMania and they successfully defended them, they got sent over to SmackDown. And it was when Rob Van Dam got sent over to SmackDown in 2005 that I really thought, like, okay, here's a chance for Van Dam to really be that breakout star on the SmackDown brand. Him and Booker T disbanded, Booker T turned heel. And then he got mixed in with the United States Championship picture. And then again, just didn't even make it on the card for WrestleMania 21. I actually believe he was in the pre-show battle royal between Raw and SmackDown. And then when he went back to Raw in 2005, you finally started to see progress with them looking to finally pull the trigger on pushing him into the main event scene that truly felt like was 5 years in the making. Because you got to think back that 2001 was the time of the invasion angle, and now we're in 2006, and it finally seemed like it was Rob Van Dam's time to shine. But he didn't get thrust into the main event scene right away. At Backlash, he had a winner-take-all ladder match with Shelton Benjamin for the Intercontinental Championship and the Money in the Bank briefcase. Just an incredible match, and I would suggest you guys go back and watch it. Backlash 2006 as a whole was just a great pay-per-view. And a really cool time for wrestling, as they were, this was kind of, 2006 was kind of like the tail end of the Ruthless Aggression era. And following that Backlash pay-per-view is when we were coming around to June. And we were getting ready for the second ever and second consecutive ECW One Nightstand pay-per-view. And that is when Rob Van Dam made an announcement to then WWE champion John Cena that he is cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase at the ECW One Nightstand pay-per-view. And it wasn't kind of like a foreign concept to do this, because you got to understand there had only been one Money in the Bank briefcase holder before this, which was Edge, who was cashed in the infamous way at New Year's Revolution. And the thing is that for Rob Van Dam, a babyface, to announce his match well in advance, it was just, it made sense. You know, it's not like nowadays that even if you're a babyface, you're going to cash in when the champion is most vulnerable. Let's say Dean Ambrose in 2016, on the very same night when he cashed in on Seth Rollins after his match with Roman Reigns. Or when Bayley did it in, I believe it was 2018 or 2019, against Charlotte Flair. No, it was against Becky Lynch, actually, for the SmackDown Women's Championship. So we see even baby faces do it in that way nowadays. But that back then, you know, with Edge being the only winner and him being an over-the-top heel, you know, it made sense for the babyface and Rob Van Dam to just book the pay-per-view match well in advance. And obviously that has all changed over the last 15 years or so. But building on into this match, we got the announcement from Vince McMahon that following the ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view, we would have the official launch of ECW as the third brand in WWE. And this made for a big deal. I was really excited. I thought it was going to be awesome. Obviously, it fell flat, but no need to get into that. We'll just talk about what it was building to this match. And it was kind of like a historic match. And Rob Van Dam started saying that he was going to win the WWE Championship, bring it to ECW, and rebrand it as the new ECW World Championship. And I remember, and I've said this numerous times on this show, so it won't come as a shock to any of you, but I said right away, like, oh no, this can't happen. I don't want RVD to win. I was just a super, like, hardcore WWE fan. And I remember even on this card, we had the heel team of Edge and Mick Foley going up against the babyface team of Tommy Dreamer and Terry Funk. But I was just such a WWE diehard that I sided with Edge and Mick Foley. Like, just whoever the WWE guy was, I was going for them. And it was the same thing with John Cena versus ECW. It was just great to be a kid at that time and be fully invested into the storylines presented to us. And this ultimately led to a WWE versus ECW special on, I believe it was actually a Wednesday night. And it wasn't a Monday Night Raw. It wasn't a SmackDown. It was just a one-time only WWE versus ECW. And we had the street fight between Tommy Dreamer and Edge. A really good match. And then the main event was an Extreme Rules match between John Cena and Sabu. And Sabu, obviously the good real-life buddy, which they played played off of on screen, of Rob Van Dam. So you knew that Sabu was going to try and maybe hurt John Cena leading into the match at the One Night Stand pay-per-view. And as this match played out, all hell really broke loose.
Sabu! Cena thrown back in the ring, the WWE champion, in big time trouble here in this non-title match.
Come on to it! I'm going to give my opinion right now. I know what Sabu's been through in his career. This is a tune-up match for Sabu.
Let me tell you what this is. This is a night that we will never forget here at the USA Network. Leading into One Night Stand this Sunday. Right, Sunday will be a night canceled. I try to be respectful of my title. Respect the ECW brand. Why? By the way,
yeah, why? He's right. Why, J.R.?
Sabu's you don't mean like hamburger meat.
You don't mean it, J.R. Say how you really feel. Here we go.
Look out. Look out. You don't know what the hell I mean, Taz.
Here we go. Sabu went to the air.
Don't cap, Sabu.
Uh-oh.
Hand bleed,
Sabu.
Watch out.
And as you heard, absolutely all hell broke loose at the end of this match as the newly acquired Big Show, who went over to, who jumped ship to ECW rather. I keep saying WCW. I'm sorry, guys. Who jumped ship to ECW earlier on in that night during the battle royal between the two brands. Kurt Angle was the big acquisition that went over from SmackDown to ECW. And everyone just compiled the ring, and there was just this massive brawl. And I remember at the end of this brawl, like, John Cena just went completely crazy with a kendo stick, and he starts bashing it against his head. And it really just set the stage as to where we were heading with this pay-per-view and beyond this pay-per-view, because while it was John Cena and Rob Van Dam who were like the two figureheads of this pay-per-view, it was kind of just building to try and set the stage as to where we were going beyond it with ECW as its own entity. And, you know, they really did a good job of like trying to make SmackDown and Raw look like a united front. Like, here you had ECW guys wearing just the black ECW shirt, Raw guys wearing the Raw shirt, and the SmackDown guys wearing the blue shirt. But it was ECW versus WWE, and it was like the first time we had seen since the start of the brand split in 2002 that Raw and SmackDown were on the same team. You know, just 6 months before this at Survivor Series 2005, we had had the first ever Raw versus SmackDown pay-per-view match, and or pay-per-view match, 5-on-5 elimination match. So it was kind of like WWE's second kick at the can for, you know, the invasion angle, although it only lasted, what, a couple weeks as opposed to 6 months or so, like in 2001. And, I mean, obviously ECW never had that star power that, let's say, WCW would have had if they had done the invasion angle right, if they had, let's say, the NWO and Goldberg and Sting and all those guys. But even with them just using the ECW originals with Rob Van Dam and Sabu and Tommy Dreamer and Terry Funk, although he was, what, over 60 years old already. I mean, I think it did what it had to do to try and get the point across that ECW was going to be its own legitimate brand. And the thing was, is that I remember that they had this whole, Paul Heyman, who was the general manager of ECW and the, and in, you know, real life behind the scenes, he was the lead writer at this time, or was going to be the lead writer. He got one pick from Raw and one pick from SmackDown. The Raw guy was obviously Rob Van Dam, who was jumping ship. And then the SmackDown guy was Kurt Angle. And Kurt Angle was like the big jump. You know, a year before this, at the original ECW One Night Stand, he was one of the guys leading the crusade, the WWE Crusaders. And, you know, he attacked Taz on a SmackDown with a chair. And then when they showed up at the ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view, he led the brawl along with guys like Edge and Eric Bischoff and John Bradshaw Layfield and Christian and whatnot. So Kurt Angle going over there, now a babyface, was a huge deal. And then you throw in the Big Show to try and legitimize that brand. And it was the same idea, rather, of doing, let's say, what they did with Stone Cold Steve Austin jump into WCW, or Kurt Angle jump into WCW during the invasion angle. And to tie this all back in with John Cena versus Rob Van Dam, who were the faces of this, it was cool because it was two baby faces. It wasn't like, let's say, in the invasion angle, The Rock was leading Team WWF as the main babyface and Stone Cold Steve Austin leading the Alliance as a heel, although flopping as a heel, but a heel nonetheless. This was one of these moments where WWE was booking each guy in Cena and Rob Van Dam as the babyface. And while I would say the vast majority of people were going for Rob Van Dam, it was a mix of, let's say, people wanting to see Rob Van Dam finally get the main event title push, and with a lot of people starting to turn against John Cena, there were still guys like me, and I was a young guy at the time. You know, I was, okay, 2006, I was 12 years old. I was fully behind John Cena. I know probably you guys will say, well, yeah, you were a young kid. Like, obviously, you're behind John Cena. That's the demographic. But no, it was actually just because I was a WWE loyalist through and through. And like I said, no matter who it was on a pay-per-view that night, I was going for WWE. And for example, I hate Rey Mysterio. I was never his biggest fan. Now I just despise him. But even back then, I was never his biggest fan, and I'm sure you guys who have listened to this show long enough know that, as I've gone on numerous rants about Rey Mysterio. And he had a match that night against Sabu for the World Heavyweight Championship, and I was 100% behind Rey Mysterio. There was Jerry Lawler versus Taz. I was behind Jerry Lawler, even though he was booked as the heel. So it wasn't just because I preferred John Cena over Rob Van Dam. It was because I was behind WWE, and that was kind of the cool dynamic that creative created, you know, no pun intended, I guess, but what they created heading into this pay-per-view. And when we finally got to the pay-per-view, we got to see a promo that really painted the picture as to how important this match was.
From history being made, the WWE Championship defended in an ECW ring. John Cena must defend against Rob Van Dam, Mr. Money in the Bank, who's cashing it in tonight.
And now it is time for the interpromotional Money in the Bank ladder match.
Now remember, ladies and gentlemen, no pinfalls, no submissions, no disqualifications or countouts. Only one way to win. Secure a ladder, climb it, retrieve the briefcase, and you have won yourself a title match for any time up to 1 year.
So they really made this match feel like a huge deal, because it wasn't just John Cena versus Rob Van Dam. It was WWE versus ECW. It was fighting to keep the WWE Championship still on Monday Night Raw, the flagship show of World Wrestling Entertainment. And they made it feel like such a big fight feel. Like, they just had a way during this time of making matches feel so important that superseded reality in some weird way. And because there was just so many layers and dimensions to this rivalry, I remember looking, like, just being so on the edge of my seat, being so anxious, because I didn't want the WWE Championship to leave Monday Night Raw. I wanted it to stay on the flagship show. I wanted to stay with the company I loved. oh, the joys of being, you know, an oblivious child, eh? But still, I'm sure even if I watched it now, although I wouldn't be so sucked in and invested into it, I would have been behind this program, because even watching it back now and reviewing it now, I still think, like, my God, they did just such a great job building this and really splitting the audience. Because if I even look at it objectively from Rob Van Dam's point of view, I could full well say that, you know, it's the, you know, just a really feel good story. Rob Van Dam, who had been a crowd favorite since coming over into WWE 5 years earlier, was finally getting his chance. And, you know, ECW was just always a likable product because it was always so damn entertaining. So although I was full-fledged behind John Cena and WWE, I didn't hate, well, no, I fully did hate the idea of Rob Van Dam winning it and rebranding it as the ECW championship. But I could see why, let's say, people were behind Rob Van Dam. And I'm sure all of you guys have heard the audio of when John Cena entered the building, and he was just getting rained down with boos, and the way he acted was just so great. John Cena, I've been singing his praises a lot as of late, but the way he knew his character and the way he knew how to play off of the crowd rather and their reactions is almost unparalleled. Maybe The Rock, maybe Stone Cold Steve Austin, but John Cena just had such a unique way about him. And because he was so universally hated and he was supposed to be a babyface, the way he was able to handle that, I think, is just so admirable and commendable in so many ways, and probably a reason as to why, now that he's gone, I respect John Cena so much as opposed to when he was there. And like I said last week, I think Cena is a perfect example of not knowing what you have until it's gone. So he comes to the ring. I remember there's that big sign that says, if Cena wins, we riot. And it was a real big fight feel, hostile environment. And when we finally got to the end of the match, we got to see something that for some of us was great, and for a lot of us was worst case scenario.
Another referee, this time it's Nick Patrick of WWE SmackDown.
Yeah, okay, why are you going to SmackDown? I guess we got to get some referee in it to get some control.
Here we go, no. If you come out, Rob Van Dam holds it out for dear life.
Oh, watch out,
man. Oh, my God.
Wow.
What the hell is that? What the hell was that?
Wait a minute.
What the hell was that? Oh.
Edge spearing the WWE champion John Cena to the table.
Where the hell did he come from? I'm speechless.
Come on, Rob, go with Rob Hill. Capitalize. We'll take it. Go, Rob. Don't be proud, Rob. Go for it. Do it.
There's no ref, though.
Van Dam up top.
We need a ref out of
God. Rob Van Dam going from parallel to perpendicular in midair for the five-star front splash.
Come on, ref. Get up, Patrick. Get him up.
Wake him up, Rob.
Yeah!
And there you have it. Edge, dressed in a full black trench coat, comes in, spears John Cena through a table, sets up the five-star frog splash for Rob Van Dam, and then Paul Heyman runs out and makes the 1-2-3 count to solidify the WWE Championship / ECW Championship victory for Rob Van Dam. And it was a way to protect John Cena in the process. Not only did Edge interfere and spear him through a table, but Paul Heyman runs out in a suit and makes the count acting as the referee, which to this day is kind of like a gray area. So, I mean, it was an iconic 1-2-3 count of Paul Heyman, but they did a good job of protecting John Cena in the process. And obviously, Edge, being the number one contender, had a vested interest in this match, and they made it so that they could continue on building the program of John Cena versus Edge that had kind of been lying dormant for a month or so. And following this, Rob Van Dam's run as both ECW and WWE champion kind of fell flat. And, you know, because what they did originally, it was supposed to be WWE Championship turned into the ECW Championship, but then they just made him both champions. And he lost the WWE Championship at the following pay-per-view to Edge at Vengeance 2006. And then he lost the ECW Championship to The Big Show in an Extreme Rules match on just a regular ECW show. And I believe it was airing on Tuesdays at this time. And as we learned later on, it was due to real life incidents of Rob Van Dam, as I believe him and Sabu were caught driving under the influence on their own time and kind of stopped his dual championship runs right in their tracks. And we never really got to see a main event push for Rob Van Dam ever really get off the floor because of real life issues that he had behind the scenes. And I think that is one of the main reasons as to why we never got to see a Rob Van Dam main event push before this and after this. And all in all, throughout all the years he was in WWE, he only had, 3 weeks as a world champion? And he always just kind of maintained that status in, that middle card, upper mid card, I would say. And I think it's because a mix of injuries and, you know, real life bad habits got the best of him, and they couldn't really trust him to be one of the faces of the company. But in terms of Rob Van Dam against John Cena, this iconic victory of Rob Van Dam at One Night Stand was really the bow that was put on this rivalry as a whole, and the rivalry between WWE and ECW, and really kicked off ECW as its own brand in a really big way. It quickly fell flat, as we all know, but in its original inception, I think it was pretty cool and done right on WWE's part. I just think that after it got up and running is where they started to really have it, where it really started to have its warts. But at this point, when they first started up, I really think WWE did a good job to make it feel like a big brand, a big deal, and almost on par with Raw and SmackDown. But anyway, guys, that's all I got for you today with John Cena versus Rob Van Dam. As always, you can check me out on Twitter at ADeMarco25. You can check Matt on Twitter at wrestling_audio. You can email Matt at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, check out our show on Patreon. You know, our next show of the What If segment is going to be dropping tomorrow. If you guys haven't checked out our show from last week, do so right now, as we covered What If The Rock Never Went Hollywood. And I think that's just going to be a great segment that Matt and I do each and every week on What If X Happened or What If X Didn't Happen. But anyway, guys, that's all for me, and I'll talk to you next time.